Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good everything else, and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, the podcast that at this point had heard ITV's
A New Age Has Begun.
That was really good.
Played. Thank you. I've got.
Did
the
you do
voice.
Your vocal warm-ups?
Absolutely, yeah. It's just being Welsh, you know, you just automatically get those pipes.
I mean, I will add that I didn't remark on this, and nobody who's listening knows this, but just before you pressed record, you went, rugby, like that. I thought that's a good vocal warm-up, so it's just as well you did that before singing The End of the World and Union.
I just seen an insect on my carpet, and it stung me, so it came out very high-pitched. I hadn't done that. Can I finish my intro?
Yeah, finish your bit, man.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, I've probably heard that more than my own name over the last year, because I've lived on my own in lockdown, right? And so I haven't heard my own name for any reason, but I've heard that a lot.
What is your name while we're here?
I genuinely don't know. I'm pretty sure it's A New Age Has Begun.
I was giving you a bit of an opportunity to introduce yourself on the podcast, because a lot of people who listen to this don't know who you are. You know, a lot of people come just for me, so...
Yeah. So you are?
I'm Will Owen, a rugby person.
Thank you. Is that hyphenated?
Rugby, yeah.
Will Owen, rugby person.
Yeah.
Three surnames.
Triple
barrel.
Yeah. So, like, Will Owen, obviously, they're two first names. So, obviously, that would be your first name. Like, why would it be anything else?
Is Owen actually your middle name legally, or is it?
No, that's William part Owen of my first is. Name. That's part
is it
my
Will
first
Owen
name.
Rather than William Owen?
Yes. Okay. That's my first name. And then my surname
Deep
is...
Hole.
Yeah. Well, that's just
that
how
name?
I was born. And then, Deepal is my middle name. My surname is rugby hyphen person.
Right.
It's just a great case of nominative determinism.
Yeah, I was about to say exactly that. It's really, really profitable.
Yeah.
Likewise, we only chose to do this tournament because my name is A New Age Has Begun. And we thought, well, ITV played that at every given opportunity, every ad break, beginning and end. Whenever they tried to do any transition to anywhere, they played that clip over and over again. And it every time made me turn around, like when you hear your name said by someone in the background, your ears prick up. And I did that every single time, no matter what I was doing, because that's my name.
I mean, I've just
really problematic.
I've just found out via Google that this year there is a film coming out, or last year there was a film that came out called The Croods, A New Age.
Yes.
So when you press play on that, A New Age Has Begun.
Yeah. It hasn't got a release in this country because they've saved it back for cinemas to reopen.
So A New Age hasn't begun
yet. A New Age has not yet begun. But when A New Age does begin, as it shall very soon, I'm sure.
You know what?
I saw a trailer for that before seeing Peter Rabbit 2 the other day, which is a horrible state of affairs.
You know what? So, Hayley Westenra's version of the Wooden Union that these are for this.
Yeah.
Why did she not sing The Croods A New Age Has Begun?
I think she has, actually.
Oh, has she?
I think, yeah.
They just
it
cut that off
her,
on the thing.
Yeah, it's between
as
her
we
and
climb
Emma Stone to do
to
it.
To reach our destiny, The Croods A New Age Has Begun.
Yes.
They're the lyrics to the Wooden Union.
That's also the entire script to the forthcoming Nicolas Cage, Emma Stone animated feature, The Croods A New Age.
Oh, I see. Maybe, because it would appear... Oh my god, this film was edited by James Ryan.
Whoa!
That's why he's not in the Lions squad. He's too busy making films.
Working for DreamWorks.
Working for DreamWorks, indeed.
What else has James Ryan the editor done? Has he done Shrek? Did James Ryan work on Shrek?
He's the one person... Well, he's one of four people involved with the production of this film who doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
Okay.
So...
I have opened his IMDb, though, and he also edited The Boss Baby.
Oh, yeah, the film where there's a boss who's a baby.
Yeah. It's really good, actually.
That's great.
There's this boss, right, but they're a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just funny because yeah. he's a baby, but he's also
so
a
he's
boss.
Also a boss. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty cool.
They also play the mime in Captain Underpants, the first movie.
No way.
Which
James Ryan does.
Doesn't speak. Yeah, James Ryan plays a bot, plays wow. a mime.
Okay.
And
okay.
they also play Story Bear in The Boss Baby.
Okay.
James
okay.
Ryan, what a multi-talented
That's a career,
man
that is.
Is. Yeah.
And then he edited The Croods, A New Age.
Mm.
And I mean, it's been certainly not talked about films yet in our knockout stage. So it's a really great use of podcast time to discuss films on a semi-final, but
I completely agree. He played a character called Jimmy the Stock Boy. I don't know where, but that's the only thing on his trivia, is his character, Jimmy the Stock Boy, is based off his real name, which is James.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's,
just in
he's
case written... you hadn't worked it out.
Yeah.
Based
well,
on...
he has two first names, right? So do you think yeah. maybe his last name is film editor?
Rugby hyphen person as well.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he's James Ryan film editor to differentiate from... Maybe, for example, if they're different people, which they're not.
Yeah.
James Ryan, rugby player. But
this
does he have to become
be
both?
This must be such a surreal thing for James Ryan, the film editor, to mm-hmm. find out his career is being broken down in detail on a rugby podcast, which, as True. An American, is a sport he's probably barely heard of.
Yeah, I guess so. There's also there's an ex-All Black lot called James Ryan as well, actually.
Mm, there is,
from,
yeah.
like, 15 years ago or whatever. So maybe they're all the same person.
I think so. I think everyone with the same name is the same person. That's why I founded the co-op, personally. That's why the founder of the co-op is now New Age Has Begun. Da, 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 da.
Is that the name of the person who founded the co-op?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And there was also a show on BBC Wales back in like 2006 or something where Gwen from Torchwood was married to someone called A New Age Has Begun. Da, 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 da. Those are people that... don't share a name with me. That I do share
I think
me.
You should change your name on Twitter to A New Age Has Begun Rugby.
I think we should start the podcast.
I think we've started
so
the podcast.
So we are
dickhead.
Here today to talk about New Zealand's win in the semi-final against Australia.
Yeah.
This is one of the last three games we have to talk about in the Rugby World Cup, so we had to get all the films out of
the
way.
It's the third to last, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You could say it's the second semi-final.
It is like, you know, like the final?
Yeah.
It's like semi that.
So the New Zealand team, to pick up on that, yeah. is largely the same. Israel Dowd comes in for Mills Mulugaina, who of course retired. Well, he hadn't retired yet, but he picked up the injury that eventually ended his All Blacks career.
Yeah.
And he had, in the week, had that interview where he said, he cried and said, I'm now a former All Black.
Yeah.
He's kind of the big headline change. He comes in. Richard Kahui also comes in for Sonny Bill Williams on the wing.
Yeah.
Sonny Bill drops to the bench.
Do you reckon that was they thought Sonny Bill didn't play very well against Argentina on the wing?
I don't know if they just thought, let's put, like, I was going to say a proper winger on, let's put another centre on the wing.
Sure, sure, but I guess he's slightly more practised. And to be fair, like, he played very well against Tonga and, you know, like, the slightly smaller nations. He's generally been quite consistent throughout this tournament. I mean, he does kind of stand out in that back line as, like, the one who feels like they're punching above the weight a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you feel like if Mills Molina was fit, they would have considered even Dag on the wing, but...
Mm. It's a weird like group of players that I love, that I think are fascinating, of players who had the form of their life immediately before World Cup and then played in the World Cup winning team. So like Nihi Munascudder is now one of those, right?
Is,
he's now
he's like
one
the prime
of
one of them, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Because he was kind of world class for like 3 months.
Yeah.
He was unbelievably good for 3 months. It happened to be 3 months of the World Cup in which the greatest team of all time won the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure there's a bunch more. There's loads in 95 of just South African players who were sort of milling around in club rugby then happened to win the World Cup in that, you know, France or Pumar team.
I feel like both the Australian winning teams have got a litter of them that have just, that kind of like peaked at the right time, you know.
Yeah, Mark Regan. You know, there's a bunch of players. It'd be interesting to see if any of the South African team end up like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and just kind of disappear into nothingness.
Mm.
You'd imagine no, given the way that they're going going now in the amazing Rainbow Cup.
You have an additional tier, which we won't get into, of players that had that same burst of form directly before Lions tour.
Sure.
And made the Lions, despite either side of that being kind of average players.
Yeah.
But they'll forever be... a Lion, in some cases even a test match, like, you know, Ben Teo.
Yeah,
just fitted what the coach wanted.
Which
and somehow
mental.
Is a test match Lion.
Yeah.
Two caps for the Lions.
Yeah.
So yeah, so the New Zealand team, yeah, the other big change, however, the pack is unchanged from the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
But at 10, due to the injury to Colin Slade, the second choice fly half, after Dan Carter went off injured, in comes Aaron Cruden. And at one point during the anthem, they throw over to a shot of Aaron Cruden, and he looks like he's won a competition to sing the anthem with the team. Like, he does not look like a professional rugby player who's earned his spot there.
I had a moment here where, because, like, you can tell when the game starts that they don't have a lot of confidence in Cruden. Like, they don't have a lot of faith in him because he's the third choice 10, and, like, they try their best to not bring him on the last game.
Mm.
If not for Slade's injury, you know, he would have stayed off the whole match. But yeah, it's weird to think that he was a year away from becoming a genuinely world-class player at this point.
Yeah.
Which I guess maybe that was a kick up the backside for him a little bit, was how...
Winning a World Cup.
Yeah, I guess so. But, like, how little people clearly believed in him. You know, they tried to send everything through Weepu and Nonu, like, either side of him. And then just kind of, like, whenever they had to throw to Cruden, they did.
Mm. Yeah, but this was his second start for the All Blacks.
Right.
His only previous start was a year earlier in the Rugby Championship, like almost dead on a year before the World Cup started.
I can remember Australia. That. And like he didn't kick the goals in that game either. And like at that point he was weeping. I believe that Graham Henry had said like Cruden can't kick goals as was a thing.
He could kick goals, but he was not a recognised goal kicker.
Yeah.
So they'd made a point in that game of starting Weepu, even at the time Jimmy Cowan was very much
his
choice.
Oh, he was the form scrum half, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, but they'd had to bring Weepu in to start because they needed someone to kick goals above Cruden.
Right.
Cruden didn't kick for his club. He didn't, you know, he wasn't a recognised kicker.
Yeah.
He was, again, it was like, it's like if Henry Slade was seen as the goal kicker in the team or something, you know.
Sure.
Someone like that that we know can kick goals, we have seen do it.
Yeah,
but is not a goal kicker, does not do it regularly, especially at test match intensity.
Sure.
Never mind, you know, or club intensity even.
Yeah. But no, I mean, that All Blacks pack obviously took Argentina to the cleaners.
Mm.
So Brad Thorne and Sam Whitelock retained, and the back row of Jerome Kano, Richie McCaw and Kieran Reid is what ultimately won that match.
Just to mention it, Cruden's only cap before this, right? The All Blacks, he was brought off on 59 minutes. The All Blacks were 22-9 behind.
Wow.
Colin Slade comes on and they score two tries and win the game.
Wow, that is not a lot of faith that they're going to have in Cruden.
No. So that was where Cruden was coming from, right?
Right.
And since then, he had kind of fallen out of contention for the All Blacks. As
so
as
that's
then
how
taken
Slade,
that.
Like, leapfrogged him.
That was it. That was the moment that it changed. It was that game from there on out.
Did not realise that.
So he then, beyond, you know, after that game, he didn't play for the All Blacks again until coming off the bench against Argentina.
Wow, that's mental. Cup. So he wasn't trusted to win games, right?
No, well, he wasn't. I mean, they didn't even play him in the World Cup warm-ups. He wasn't in the wider squad. He wasn't considered.
We got caught up in the white baiting discussion last week, with the New Zealand Argentina game the other week. But I can remember when Slade went down in that game. After the game, Sean Fitzpatrick in the pundit box saying, look, we need to just say sod the rules and call up Nick Evans from Harlequins.
Yeah.
And he was saying that, like, look, he's the 110 we basically have left who I know will do the job. And obviously, for the All Blacks, there's so much pressure on them, as we've alluded to a lot of times before. And this is such a precious World Cup for them. And, like, it was kind of like, if they don't win this one, will they ever win a World Cup, you know? And it did feel like, and I didn't disagree with Sean Fitzpatrick, that you had to bring in somebody who you knew was a world-class 10, even if you technically aren't allowed because he plays in England, you know, because the All Blacks don't pick players who don't play in New Zealand. And that is just a policy. That's a rule. Like, when you leave one of the New Zealand clubs, you know what you're signing up for. You know you can't play for the All Blacks anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And them saying, just look, break the rules and call up Nick Evans instead of Aaron Cruden. That's how little faith people had in him and Stephen Donald, I guess, as well.
And that was a wide opinion. That was talked about before the World Cup. That was talked about especially that week before Cruden was called up.
Yeah.
And when he was called in, despite the fact, you know, he's played a handful of games, he scored a try against Wales off the bench, but that was kind of it.
Right, yeah.
There'd been, you know, his one start hadn't gone particularly well, and then he'd been dropped. It kind of became this, you know, he kicked one goal, which was the conversion between the posts.
Yeah.
That was all he had to his name.
That's
really
crazy, that is.
So he's then called in. He starts at 10. And on the bench comes Stephen Donald, who doesn't get on in this game.
No.
He is just there as a
warm body
just in case. Too busy white
baiting on the sideline in the Waikato River.
Only if they have another fly half go down injured that Stephen Donald will come on. And that's clearly not going to happen. You know, their luck's not that bad.
What, like, genuinely, I don't know who they would have had left if, I mean, we won't spoil what happens in the next game with Aaron Cruden, but...
That happened a year earlier.
Yeah, if...
A week earlier.
Yeah, if Aaron Cruden
had
gone down...
a year earlier, they'd be fine. You know, Carter would have been fit.
Yeah, yeah. If they'd lost another 10, like, I genuinely don't know who would have been left. Would they have to go for a young Tom Taylor?
Could have happened, right? That year, Gareth Anscombe had played incredibly well for the under-20s.
Yeah, that's true.
That summer, right?
Very true.
Would they have gone, let's call up Gareth Anscombe, then that's an enormous sliding doors moment.
Yeah, it is, massively.
If Donald or Cruden went down injured
in
this game.
That's really interesting. If anybody is listening from New Zealand, please let us know, because like I can't remember who the informed Super Rugby fly halves were that aren't the four that went.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if there's anybody that we're forgetting, please let us know.
No... Countries don't produce five international class tens at a time.
No.
You know?
Why would
New Zealand had five.
Yeah.
They, as you say, you don't have a sixth. You know, there probably was an equivalent of Alteri Black or something floating about.
Yeah.
But it was either him or they go, and I reckon this is what they would have done. They would have called up Anscombe or Barrett from the 20s.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Anscombe was the one playing ten. He was the one getting more headlines at the time.
Yeah.
So that becomes, a whole different deal if Gareth Anscombe plays for the All Blacks in the World Cup.
Maybe the 12-year-old Richie Mwanga could have got a game.
Yes, I don't know. There's options there, or do they just go? We're going to play Mar Nonu at 10. You know, we're going to hope that one of them's fit and they stay the whole time. And
put Sonny Bill there.
Dag.
Mind you, Piriwipu played there against Canada, didn't he?
Yes,
and was decidedly average. So,
is your Dag played some ITM Cup level rugby at 10?
That's true.
You know, but yeah. So
anyway.
That's the All Blacks team.
Yes,
Australia. To say we're not at the kickoff yet. Australia named what was going to be a very settled team.
Yeah.
The only change would have been that Nathan Sharp dropped off the bench for Rob Simmons.
Yeah.
Who is described by Nick Mullins in commentary as the young Rob Simmons, which I thought was a brand new sentence. I've never heard that before. I'm pretty sure he's always been 31.
Yeah, it feels like he's been on the brink of retirement for a long time.
Mm. So Australia named the same 15. Then the day before the game, Kirtley Beale pulls out injured. And they shuffle Adam Ashley-Cooper to full... Well, they really have a handful of options, right? They consider they can either shuffle Adam Ashley-Cooper to fullback and bring someone in the centre, or, and this is what they did first, they ran to the airport, like the end of a rom-com, to check if Martin Rodriguez fancied playing fullback.
Yeah.
So you have someone who's less of a dick in the team.
Yeah.
Less of a dick of the day liability. He went, no, vamos, got on his plane, flew off.
Yeah,
flew away. And instead they were left going... Anthony, are you free on Saturday?
Yeah, I can remember at the time thinking like, oh, that's strange. They've gone O'Connor on the wing with Ashley Cooper fullback rather than the other way around. Rather than thinking, they've picked Ampfinger in the centre for a World Cup semi-final. This is the biggest game of a lot of these guys' lives.
And certainly the biggest game of Anthony Fainga's life.
Yeah, that's mad that guy has started a World Cup semi-final.
They even could have put Rob Horn or Beric Barnes in the centre.
I know, that's my favourite thing, the fact they have two centres on the bench, one of them being Beric Barnes. I know, it would have meant shuffling things around and putting McCabe at 13 or whatever. But
we keep making this point that at the time I rated Anthony Fenga, I thought he was a good, solid 13.
Yeah.
I thought he was a good player. And watching every game of this tournament back, I have realised that was not the case.
No, yeah. Mind you, he wasn't as spectacularly terrible in this game as he has been before.
We'll get onto this. But otherwise, yeah, same Australia team. And they kick off, and the kickoff goes
badly. Oh, my God. So, public enemy number one, Quade Cooper, takes the kickoff. And you're thinking, okay, so I'm vilified in Eden Park. Like, I am wanted dead in this stadium. You know what I can do? I could either play well, or I could get these guys on my side.
I watched a chunk of ITV's pre-match coverage. They did one of those that we mentioned, one of those pieces that were very good about Quade Cooper, where they did, like, vox pops and asked people... what's the first word that comes to mind when you hear about Quade Cooper? One person just swore at them.
Oh my God.
Just like, I hate that guy. One person said criminal, and someone said, that's a bit harsh. And he said, okay, Australian, same thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was that kind of thing. And then that's also the infamous interview where they asked David Campese about him.
Right.
And David Campese said, you know, had a go at him and said, like, I don't think he's a real deal. I don't think he's...
Right.
I don't think he's good enough, blah, blah, blah. To which the interviewer replied, it was Gabriel...
Gabriel Clark.
Gabriel Clark. I was going to say Gabriel Byrne, but it is not the Irish actor Gabriel Byrne. Yeah, to which Gabriel Clark replied, an Aussie having a go at another Aussie. And he said, nah, he's a Kiwi. And I'm an Italian.
I think I can remember this. This rings a bell now.
Yeah.
I, however, didn't watch the ITV coverage. I instead watched the secondary Australian coverage, where the commentator was a guy called Ray Hadley, and he was assisted by George Gregan and John Eales. And I'm going to play you my favourite piece of commentary from that game.
Okay.
Could you imagine if Digby Ioane actually finished that try and it was like, this is a historic, like, amazing Rugby World Cup try to seal the game against the All Blacks or put the Wallabies in the lead or whatever, and he started the commentary with James O'Connor looks a bit like Justin Bieber. But I like how he says it, he says it in the present tense, like that is what James O'Connor is currently doing. Like, oh, James O'Connor steps to his right, James O'Connor kicks the ball, James O'Connor passes, James O'Connor looks like Justin Bieber.
I mean, we'll get to that. We'll get to that moment later on.
Yeah,
but yeah, there was that. That was kind of James O'Connor was very much the pretty boy, and Quade Cooper was very much the public enemy number one. I was talking about all around. That was what most of the bullets seemed to focus on was Quade Cooper.
Yeah,
and how much he's hating New Zealand.
Yeah,
that was what they talked about in all the lead up, and then they were talking about it solidly. And Nick Mullins could do like the smoothest introduction to him putting the ball out on the full, because it go like, and he's looking for a great start, and he's not got it. He's put the ball out on the full. Oh dear, Quade.
I just love that. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you really don't help yourself sometimes, do you, Quade? Like, we are literally 0 minutes and 3 seconds into the game, and Quade Cooper has made a mistake. He's already put the ball out on the full.
And so begins a Quade Cooper breakdown. Like, he basically has a complete and utter meltdown for most of the game.
Yeah.
He has the... There was that narrative around Quade Cooper's entire career that, you know, he when he's good, but when he's bad, he's terrible. But he actually didn't have that many bad games. Like,
sure,
every now and again, he'd make a big mistake, but he rarely had a game where he was completely
where it was like compounding the errors.
But this one, he was.
What I do respect is that he didn't go into a shell at all, Quade Cooper. Like, he did keep trying things, but the All Blacks just didn't let them come off.
No.
And, like, the sheer amount of pressure they put on him from minute one to minute 80 was just ruthless. And, like, that kick meant that within 50 seconds of kickoff, Piriwipu had slid a kick into the Australian 5-metre channel, and they were already on their own try line because of that from Quade Cooper.
Yeah, and so begins this enormous period of pressure that I think the All Blacks in the first 10 minutes, from that kick onwards, from the moment they smell some blood, you know, like a shark, they then just bite in and they don't let go of Australia.
Yeah.
And after 10 minutes, it should have been 13-0, but Piriwipu misses two kicks of goal.
Yeah. I think
in that 10 minutes, 13-0 would have been kind to Australia in terms of how good the All Blacks
were. I reckon this first 10, to 13 minutes, right, that is as good as anybody's played All World Cup. Like, that is the best period the All Blacks have played the whole tournament.
I thought that.
And possibly any team. Like, the attacking shape was bang on. Like, we spoke in the last game about against Argentina, their shape was fine. In that first 10 minutes, their shape was on point, and they had a few really, really great attacks. There was one where Cruden fizzes this pass across to Corey Jane, and it slides into touch instead. But it's one of those where you don't mind it, because he's gone for a really super ambitious pass, and if it comes off, then he's probably going into score. And Israel Dagg has a great counter-attack at one point. There's a great bit where Corey Jane kicks ahead, forces James O'Connor to ground the ball behind his own try line after handing off Richie McCaw. And you know what? It was a great fend by O'Connor on Richie McCaw, and it feels like it was wasted on his own try line.
Nick Mullins is really annoyed about that.
He
starts screaming, James O'Connor, what's he doing? What are you doing, James O'Connor? What are you doing? But actually, he's carried the ball back over his try line.
Yeah.
And he's trying to beat... He managed to beat two people when he's got four to beat. And he can't manage it.
As a right-footed kicker, it's the hardest thing you can have there.
But it's the... How relentless the All Blacks are doesn't just come from how good their attack is. You said there's the attack there by Cruden. There's another one where he slides through a gap that sort of wasn't there.
Yes, he does that dummy.
That's a... Yeah, it's a proper involuntary noise moment.
Yeah, that's fantastic dummy.
as a, you know, like that's a proper settler if you're a young 10.
Yeah.
And you can slice through the attack. Absolutely. A few minutes into the game.
Yeah.
It's not just their attack, but most of that comes from how good their kicking game is.
Yeah.
So you've got, you mentioned the Corey Jane one. There's one phase pretty much on that whole period where the All Blacks go backwards, where there's another shot. And straight away, Nonu, like they still have a quick ball after going backwards. And Nonu slides a kick in behind and they trap the wall to be backwards,
their,
right?
Their kick
and
chase it still feels like the All Blacks are completely on top. Unbelievably good, the kick chase.
But their timing and the accuracy of the kicks they're putting in are just excellent. You know, like a lot of things have changed about rugby over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But a good kicking game is broadly speaking the same thing.
There was absolutely no room for David Pocock to come in and peel for the ball like he did against South Africa as well. So, there's one where he does try and he's penalised by Craig Joubert. Twice. Right.
He gets penalised twice in those first 13 minutes.
Yeah.
And both of them, I think he would have got away from the previous game.
That's it. I think he probably was getting the feelers out a little bit. And that first one was stroke between the posts. And, you know, you don't think David Pocock would give away a penalty that's that convertible, you know?
Mm.
You think he...
No, he's not. I don't think that's deliberate at all.
No, I think
he's genuinely just going for...
I think he's going for the ball and wanting to know what the referee's boundaries are a little bit.
Yeah.
And... Craig Joubert, after all of the discourse that went on, and like I imagine in ITV, there was a lot of discourse about Bryce Lawrence and what went on the previous week. But with all of that having gone on, referees would have been super aware of Pocock and what he will try and get away with at the breakdown.
Yeah, yeah. So Pocock makes 3 turnovers because he's 2 penalties that break down.
Right.
Which for David Pocock, those are very poor statistics. Yeah. And I think tell you
he was in double figures of turnovers the previous week, right?
Something like that. I think he got like 8 or 9. Yeah. Right. Which is an absurd number.
Yeah.
Right. But like for David Pocock, that's what he does.
Yeah.
So the fact that the All Blacks kept him to basically like plus one as a, you know, in terms of value of wins v given away.
Yeah.
Is as impressive as anyone ever managed against him. You know, without you doing the thing, Wales did a few times where they individually targeted him, set several men on him to take him out. Which the All Blacks weren't doing. They just managed them because they were so used to it.
They were just really efficient. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 5 minutes into the game is one of sort of the key points of the entire game. And I'll level with you. I thought this was about 20 minutes in.
Me too.
I seem to remember this being a lot later on. But my God, that capping off this insane period of pressure that's gone off where basically Martin Onu scores a try in which Israel Dagg just decides... Yeah, let's score a try, boys.
Yeah. So he absolutely blitzes on the outside of Rocky Elson, who misses him.
Oh, like
he
that's comes a hell of a step, that is.
He comes at the outside of him with such pace and then changes to the, you know, he's running at the outside shoulder. He runs, then steps slightly, goes on the outside.
Yeah.
Then, gets around the first guy covering. I think it's actually Cooper.
Yeah.
And Quade Cooper gets back and manages to make the tackle. He then... kind of very gracefully, like an ice skater,
this is a mental
kind of manages
attack.
To free his legs, raise his legs up, you know, get his arm around and offload to Nonu, who's just kind of waiting there on the try line. Just go like, thanks.
I imagine people would have seen this try before because it's quite a famous try, but I can't quite do it justice because it's one of those where his body is at an angle where throwing an offload shouldn't be possible.
Yes,
like he has sidestepped. Try and go around Quade Cooper, is tackled, he falls to the floor, and as his shoulder blade is about to hit the touchline, he manages to throw the ball one-handed infield to Nonu, and it goes perfectly into his breadbasket, and he just has to go 5 metres and score. Like, it is such an unreal offload. And I suppose it's one of those things that, if the person is there in support, you can get the ball to them. But I don't get that. Like, it's one thing I hate, because I feel like, and I don't hate it, but I'm just very jealous of it, because... I wish it was that simple rather than like having to think about freeing your arms and actually throwing the pass. Like, I can remember there was, speaking of Aaron Cruden, so the next year against Ireland, there was a try Sonny Bill scored off first phase on a scrum where Aaron Cruden just on first phase takes the ball into contact and then on the floor does an insane pass out the back of his back of his arm. And Sonny Bill just regathers it and sprints in from about 40 yards. And she's like, what was the call there? Like, what made you decide you were going to do that and just go, let's score like that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How is it that easy?
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Though I will note one thing, right? Yeah. Have you noticed the contribution of our friend Amfinger in this try?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I'm going to send you an angle of this try right now. And I'd like you to just keep an eye on Anthony Fayenga. We are going to watch this now. Okay.
Yeah.
Ball comes out. It goes here to Dag.
Oh, I can see Amfinger. Oh my God. Oh my God. No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
He just steps here we are. Away from... Oh, no.
He actually steps away from Israel Dagg and just lets him straight through. It's not a missed tackle because he doesn't even try to tackle him.
Yeah.
He just gets out of the way.
In order for that to go down on your stats as a missed tackle, you have to be somewhat close to him.
Yeah. He's probably just trying to massage his stats so it doesn't look as bad.
Sure,
When he gets his eventual...
Oh, my God. That's disgraceful, man. Like, yeah. I guess me saying earlier I didn't think he'd had the most woeful game was clearly just that I hadn't noticed him, you know? Like, which is probably what he's trying to do. That's probably what happened in 2011, you know? People just didn't notice how shit he was. But my God, that's disgraceful that he would do that in the semi-final.
There's a moment, and maybe we should leave this for later, but I'm going to do it now. There's a few I'm thinking moments. Should we talk about them now, or should we save them for later? There's one moment that I think it's the Anthony Faenga, like, Mona Lisa, you know? It's like... It's hanging in the Louvre somewhere, this clip.
In case... we've kind of gone on this Ant Finger tirade as though everybody's listened to every episode, which some people have, and that's great. Mm. But for anybody who hasn't, in the first game, there was a point where Quade Cooper made a really nice break, and then he just ran out of nowhere and speared Sergio Parisse off the ball to ruin the attack. Ant Finger got done for crossing, right?
Yes.
Against Ireland, he threw a pass into touch, like in his own 22, that was also forward. There was definitely something else he did in the Ireland game that was really, really dumb. I can't remember. In the USA game, you gave him dick of the day for scoring two tries that he shouldn't have scored.
Yeah, well, okay, so he had like a four-man overlap and then one guy in front of him, and instead he runs into that guy and knocks himself out doing it.
Yeah, oh yeah,
and then like, gets he takes like, the worst over, possible option.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he somehow, yes, he scores a try, but it was a terrible thing to do. And basically, yeah, like, it's been an incredible discovery to realise that he is shite.
Yes.
having, as I said, rated him about the time. And he has become, alongside Argentina's Martin Rodriguez, one of the two real shining lights of the Dick of the Day segment of this podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
So, there's a moment in the second half, right, where Anthony Faenga, okay, off first phase, misses the tackle. The All Blacks, kind of, he spirals off, someone else makes the tackle, All Blacks make a net gain, right? He then gets back up, sprints back into line, fair play to him, you know, trying to make amends.
Yeah.
He then misses a second tackle, right? And the All Blacks make a breakdown.
Like,
the wing.
I know where
the guy
this is going.
He then gets back into line. There's enough, like, 20-odd seconds passed. The All Blacks go through a few phases, and eventually they run at him. He misses his third tackle in the movement. And you're going, fair play, this is very impressive. And just when you think it can't get any worse, right?
Yep.
The All Blacks play one more phase, then they knock the ball on. The ball is picked up by one of the Australians, who offloads to Anthony Faenga, who then, as he's going to ground, drops the ball forwards.
What a punish.
So in 45 seconds, Anthony Faenga misses three tackles and makes a knock-on, right? For context, Justin Tiprick missed three tackles and made no knock-ons in the entire Six Nations put together.
Oh my God! That's incredible. So, and he played pretty much the 80 minutes of all five games, right?
Yeah.
So, do the math, lads.
It's just an incredible moment of Dick of the Dayness.
That's a hell of a stat. I love that. Like, how has he managed to do this every game? I mean, we'll find out later on whether or not he gets your Dick of the Day, but people who are looking at this on Paddy Power, I think now's the time to place your bets on whether
We've mentioned how shitting the bed Quade Cooper was, how the bed was shat by Mr. Cooper.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll keep talking about the All Blacks.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I feel like a lot of this will end up being us talking about the All Blacks, because this is quite one-sided, this game.
Yeah. I mean, I've got this jot down that, like, there are, I think, 35 seconds in which I considered that the All Blacks might not win this game.
Yeah.
Obviously, I knew the outcome and I knew the All Blacks go on to win the World Cup, but there's about 35 seconds in which you think that might not be on the cards during this entire 80 minutes.
Yeah.
So right from the off, literally from the kickoff, things go badly. The All Blacks then pile more and more and more and more and
they're
more
8-0 up
the
10 minutes
away.
In.
Yeah, and as I said, they missed by that point two shots at goal.
Yeah.
And then they miss another
and also,
afterwards.
Let's address this. Puruipu misses two very easy shots at goal.
He misses two very
and
easy
one
shots
slightly
goal.
More difficult.
One of the touchline, which is fine, you know, whatever.
Kick a goal. But yeah. And what my favourite thing is, there's the one where he's just next to the post, but he's about 10, 15 metres out.
Mm.
And he kicks the ball and he hits the left-hand touchline, no, the left-hand post. And then he chases after the kick itself as it's deflecting and bats it back. So, yeah. Like, he didn't even have time to, like, pick up his kicking tee or anything. He just straight away...
What happens to the tee? I didn't notice that. I didn't stop to think about it.
I tried watching this back and I couldn't find what happened. I couldn't find anyone picking it up or anything.
Does someone just eat it? Does it just dissolve into the ground?
Wait a second.
Was he using, like, a biodegradable tee?
I've just thought...
It's Dmitry Yashvili.
Dmitry Yashvili got it.
Dmitry Yashvili's there.
Either that or it's Vincent Ratte. Either way, it's some French prick.
He's already got into the World Cup final. Yashvili's hanging around the stadium early.
Yeah.
And wants to piss off weeping.
Some French bastard is hanging around on that pitch. And I think, right, what happened is Dmitry Yashvili wore an all-black shirt, maybe like the chain shirt or whatever, put on a funny hat or a wig or a mask.
Mm.
You know one of those things, where those masks or the thing where it's the funny nose and the moustache? He was wearing that and then just being like, oh yeah, I'm, you know. Let's say it's Adam Thompson, right?
Sure.
So he's pretending to be Adam Thompson, bringing on the water, and then just going, oh yeah, yeah, here's your kicking tee, in his best English. Secretly actually modifying the kicking tee as well, so he's going to miss more kicks than keeping hold of it, so he can not kick in the final.
I love the idea that Dmitry Yashvili has, in order to impersonate Adam Thompson, he obviously is speaking in a second language, can't do the accent at all, so has just had to look up Adam Thompson on Wikipedia. And it's just kind of going like, oh, hello, I love being born on the 23rd of March, 1982. How do you do, fellow Kiwis?
Do you think he's found that, the celebration he does, the John Cena
the
celebration?
John Cena thing, yeah.
Do you think he's found that on YouTube? And
he just keeps doing that all the time. He's just doing that as he takes the tee off.
Envisaging Dmitry Yashvili doing that celebration makes me physically uncomfortable.
Yeah, I also like the fact that he's on... You know those little, like, buckets you turned upside down in school to make you taller? Those like, little stilt things.
I didn't need to, mate. I'm 6 foot two. I don't need to do that.
That is not true.
I am.
And you do that. Also, why would you then not do it to be 6 foot?
It's the perfect height, 6 foot two.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I don't want to be
that,
any taller.
Okay. Well, Dmitry Yashvili would have to say, I am at least 6 foot five, and the 17 stone five, and I went to Christchurch Boys' School.
Yeah, he's on
just
stilts.
In order, he's doing all of that in order to try and steal a tee.
Yeah.
I realise that's a callback to very early on in the podcast, about a year ago.
Yeah. Oh, Christ.
Where there's an infamous story where Freddie Burns' first game for Gloucester as a young sort of 19, 20-year-old was against Biarritz, and during the warm-up, Dmitry Yashvili stole his tee and kicked off over the rest of the game.
And he slotted a touchline conversion with Freddie Burns' tee, which is like the kick in the nuts.
So, that all takes place. The All Blacks are completely dominant.
Yes.
They should be, frankly, they should be about 20 points ahead after 20 minutes. They're only 8-0 up.
Yeah.
Because Weepu's missing goals and they don't quite finish a couple of times.
Yeah. But I don't think they mind that, you know. I think they're very comfortable with the position they're in.
Yeah, they look comfortable enough. Then, from the kickoff and the penalty, they kick long and the All Blacks shank the kick slightly.
Yes.
And it lands in the hands of James O'Connor, who looks a bit like Justin Bieber.
Yeah, so James O'Connor catches the ball, runs sideways,
looks a bit like
Justin Bieber, and then passes to Digby Iwani, who goes straight through.
Who explodes through.
The hell of a break.
And inches away from the try. Like, he is carrying three people on his back the last 15 metres towards the try line.
Jerome Kano, man. Jerome Kano, like, as he's about to cross the try line, just picks him up and drags him back an extra 4 metres. And that makes the attack so much harder for the Wallabies, because they've got to then adjust their clear out, adjust their depth onto the ball, and they have to then rethink their attack a little bit, just by a couple of seconds, you know, by a couple of movements of the feet. But it's a huge intervention by Kano.
Yeah. But Iwani is, and also he's being referred to as Digby Iwani
at this point
as well. But Digby Iwani is... as a, probably one of those five players on his back coming in away from scoring a try.
Yeah.
Which would make things 7-8, which is a very, very different game.
He does so well, gets close as he does. Like, his leg drive is insane.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
He's one of those players that's just like, he's clearly so hard to tackle.
Yeah, you can tell. And he's also the one player throughout this game that never looks deterred. You know,
yeah.
A few of the Wallabies in the last 20 minutes look like they've been battered and they look knackered. And after last week being so physically draining, you know, the number of tackles he had to make in the quarterfinal, he's the one player the whole way is... Not that the others weren't giving it their all, but he's the one player that doesn't look like it's got them at all.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this, and we'll get on to Man of the Match later on, but I was trying to think of, like, who I thought the Wallabies' best player was. And I was just kind of thinking, like, there wasn't really a player who managed to succumb to the All Blacks' pressure.
I But I thought Genya played very well as well.
Yeah, I think he did, but he did have a couple of moments of...
Oh, sure,
like,
yeah.
Of, you know, sucking it up a little bit. But I do think Digby Ioane made a couple of really, really nice breaks when he had no right to.
Mm, absolutely. I thought he was very, very good. So, yeah, so he gets right up to the try line. Australia do recycle. Genya is kind of left in a few minds because, all, as you say, all his options have to kind of rechange their depth, rechange the lines they're running. They're not quite set up properly. But eventually they do work it out to Rudiki Samo on the wing.
Yes.
And he frees an arm. Adam Ashley Cooper comes back inside and picks a line that he would have scored off, but the offload is too low. It's around his ankles. And they do, you know, keep hold of the ball. But if he'd taken that pass had gone to hand, Ashley Cooper scores. The Wallabies.
Not many other players would, but Ashley Cooper would.
Ashley Cooper would have finished that.
Yeah.
He's an unbelievable. He's one of the best finishers we've seen.
If the pass was not only stuck, but was fast as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if he threw it at him, you know.
Mm.
And it,
which
it was
a
very.
It was a problem. It came out his hand
too
early.
It was a very ambitious offload from Samo. Mm. But that's the thing. It's one of those. You don't want to hang it. You want to trust that your guy can catch the ball, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like the exact opposite of the pass Emily Scarrett threw for Rona Lloyd in Premier 15 which I realise not many people saw, but like it's a, you know, it's a counterpoint. So yeah, so you've got that, and that doesn't quite come off. The Wallabies do manage to recycle the ball, but they're still putting a lot of pressure on. They still feel like they're on top, and it's such it sums up who this Australia team and what they were so well.
Yeah,
because the All Blacks were in complete control of that game. As you said, it was probably the best 15 minutes we've seen from any team in this World Cup. And they were 2.5 inches, you know, two balls being 0.5 inch further away, one off the ground, one towards down towards the ground, away from it only being a 1-point game.
Yeah.
You know, just because their backs were so talented and so good and could make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
But in the end, whilst they're on top, Richie McCaw comes in, and we said it earlier, David Pocock doesn't give away a professional foul. This is 100% deliberate, right? He comes over the ball and he just hangs onto it, knowing he's completely illegal. And because it's just near the post, the Wallabies obviously kick it because it's a
World Cup semi-final. They'll go to 8-3, and the All Blacks are thinking, like, 8-3 feels like that's fine.
The moment that James Hall points the post and signals they're going to go for goal was the end of the 35 seconds that I thought Australia might win this game.
I see, yeah.
Because up until then, you thought if they get back to 8-7... after the All Blacks being so dominant, that changed the mindset of both teams completely. You know, like, they can do everything and will still roughly be in the game.
I don't think it was an incorrect decision for James Hall.
No, I don't. I don't.
But you're right that there's something of... It's more the fact that straight from there, they didn't create an opportunity to get another three-pointer.
Yeah, exactly. If they'd scored a try there, that turns the game. That makes the All Blacks incredibly, incredibly worried.
Yeah.
And this is an All Blacks team whose heads you could get into.
The thing is, the Wallabies never really looked like scoring a try, you know?
They broke the line
quite a lot of times, but the All Blacks' defence was so, so solid and just assured.
They made two chances and they were inside 20 seconds of each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they get onto the try line again in about 77 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, like
they have a couple of times they get to the 22 and they have a couple of decent, solid attacks. But the All Blacks defence just looks so organised. And again, like, there's always, like, there's one point where the Wallabies have a great attack and then Mon Nonu wins a turnover. And it's just like, great, that guy can do it as well. You know, because, like, McCaw, Reed and Kano are working their socks off. And, like, in all of the big games in this World Cup, they've always come up with whenever the opposition has a decent attack, one of those three will pilfer the ball.
Absolutely.
And then when none of them are around and Mon Nonu's doing it, you feel like you can't win, can you?
No, exactly. And, you know, I've got just so many notes just saying this is phenomenal. New Zealand are ruthless. That first half, they are completely on top.
They are so good.
There's a minute in which Australia are in the 22. Otherwise, 39 of them, they look completely dominant. And it's like, I had a conversation with friend of the pod, Rhiannon Goff-Jones, after she listened to the last episode, where she was very adamant that Wales would have won that World Cup. And we had the conversation that lasted like an hour. It didn't need to. And we both got just needlessly, like, we got to the point where, like, neither of us are ever going to talk the other one round.
Sure.
So why are we still having this conversation? But watching the All Blacks,
Rhiannon,
going like, the All Blacks would have played like that against Wales, I feel, in a final.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have had the kind of, like, panic that they did against France after 2007, after 2010, when they just lost them. And they would have torn Wales apart there. Wales would have been 20 points behind.
The thing is,
Wales would have really, really panicked.
Looked back on the All Blacks winning this World Cup in a way that's like, it's not like sour, but it's just kind of like, it doesn't feel like it has the same glisten that the 2015 one did. Because, like, it feels like they just kind of won this World Cup by default, you know? And that's like the way that I've kind of looked back on it in the last 10 years. But watching this game back felt like, oh no, they deserve to go all the way here. Like,
yeah,
there's been a couple of times where they've slightly faltered, you know, like the Argentina game, they had a bit of a scare, but like, I suppose they battered France, you know.
But it's...
And they have been very dominant in all the games that they've played. But
it's a bit like them against Ireland in the quarterfinal in 2019.
Yeah.
Where, because they shat the bed the following week, people forget they were genuinely incredible in that game.
Yeah.
It was one of the best performances anyone put in the champions in that whole
people
World
Cup. Had sort of forgotten that the All Blacks were such a strong contender, in a way. Yeah. And they pulled out that game against Ireland, and they suddenly were straight back in contention.
Mm.
I guess they were favourites to beat England, weren't they? But
yeah,
obviously Eddie Jones outsmarted them a little bit. But no, you're right. It's a very, very similar thing to that. And
it's interesting. Sorry, go on.
My context on this may be morphed again when we watch the final in a couple of weeks. But I've often looked back on that final and thought, we'll get onto this, and wondered whether the All Blacks were lucky or they did a couple of things well, which meant they won the final, you know, and that maybe could have gone the other way and they could have lost the thing. But looking back at this game, this feels like we're watching a world champion side.
Absolutely. But I was also reminded, and it's funny we mention 2019, because I was also very much reminded of England in the 2019 semi-final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they're very similar score lines. That one was 19-7, this one is 26.
Yeah.
So just 1 point in either direction.
Yeah.
It's a difference. And just in that the team that won felt so much more dominant than they showed on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
But that's all you need in a World Cup match. You know, World Cup knockout game.
Yeah.
Where you just need to be 8 points up at any given time, really, yeah, in order to win it. Well, you know, you need to be 1 point up at any given time.
I was going
to
say,
but you know what I mean.
A two-score game at this point is pretty insane, you know?
Yeah.
Winning a World Cup knockout match by more than 7 points is not unheard of, but it's not common.
I think if both England in 2019 and New Zealand in 2011 here had played to the exact level they did in comparison to where the opposition were playing,
mm-hmm,
the level they were playing at, in a autumn international or something,
sure,
they would have won by a bigger scoreline.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's something about a World Cup quarterfinal. Both teams bring it up. You know?
Yeah.
Both teams bring their level up a bit further still. But also, you've just got the fact that you approach it differently, your mind's in a different place, you're thinking about the following week as well as the previous weeks. So actually just being dominant, actually just scraping through, and the feeling on the pitch, and it's something Sam Warburton talked about in the final during commentary,
mm-hmm,
for the European Cup final at the weekend, is just as important, you know, just like the feeling that we are in control.
Yeah.
And the All Blacks were in control for 79 minutes.
And the All Blacks have that, you know, as I said, like you alluded earlier to the fact that like Marnon would very comfortably slide in a kick as soon as they lose 1% of their momentum, you know, and they have that, you know, and like their forwards were brilliant. There was a few times like when they'd knock the ball on and win a scrum on the Australian, not a penalty on the Australian scrum.
Yeah.
It didn't matter to them, like that Weepu was missing these kicks or that there's one where he put it out on the full and they didn't look remotely fazed because they knew that they'd get another chance to redeem that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's something about them missing a kick would mean a dropout that they would then just put more pressure on from.
Yeah.
As you said, there was no lead above it at all.
Yeah.
And it almost becomes quite a samey game to talk about. You know, I'm running out of points to talk about because it was all the All Blacks just piling this relentless pressure.
I don't want to sound like a broken record because it's the same story all day. I mean, there's a point where Cruden sends this really smart kick through and sends James O'Connor into touch in his own 22.
Yeah.
Which felt so emblematic of that All Blacks first half. There's also, Sokopi Kepu goes off for James Slipper early on. Is that an enforced substitution or is that tactical?
So, he'd taken a blow to the face about 5 minutes earlier and he was down and the doctor was looking at his eye.
Right.
But I wasn't sure if that was because he'd got mashed in the scrum, he'd been mashed in two scrums in a row, or it was his eye and he couldn't see what could.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
He couldn't, for example, sit down and watch the hit film, The Croods, A New Age.
Yeah, yeah, which I believe he was actually planning to do at half time.
Yeah, yeah, he was intending to travel.
And then,
the future,
basically, because HIAs weren't a thing at this point, so instead of giving the player the head injury assessment, they would make them watch The Croods, A New Age, instead, which I know wasn't out for another 9 years at this point, but they had, like, early access to it via James Ryan from his All Blacks days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's amazing how the time space continuum doesn't apply to anyone called James Ryan.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty mad. Well, no, it was made a long time in advance and only released last year, or not even yet, because of the bloody pandemic.
Of course, yeah,
bloody
yeah.
COVID coming over here, postponing our crude and new age movies.
It's really the one thing we are most upset about.
Yeah.
Rather than the whole thing.
That's like, also, COVID was worth it until a new age the crudes
yeah.
was delayed.
Until we lost that.
Yeah.
We lost that. It also applies to people called Ryan James as well, I want to make that.
Oh, okay.
So the rugby league player, Ryan James,
right.
is fine.
Okay.
Because he is literally just James Ryan but walking backwards.
Oh, okay. Is that his full name?
Ryan James, walking back.
Yeah.
No, he is called Ryan James, but all he is James Ryan walking backwards. He's him from Parallel Universe. We just walk backwards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like Tenet.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And so rugby happened. No, the one other sort of Australia attack is like 2 minutes to go, and it all ends because they chuck it wide. They've got a tiny, tiny overlap. Adam Ashley Cooper falls over, and Richie McCaw gets over it and turns it over. And that is one of, again, the three moments you mentioned, one of them that feel emblematic.
Yeah.
The other one, so the All Blacks spread it wide, right? They get a bit of a burst down the short side. David Pocock gets in there, turns it over, chucks the ball up to Orgenia, who is then, this is on the 10-metre line, he then gets smashed so hard by Richie McCaw, he ends up back inside his own 22 before he goes to
ground. Yeah, that was like, he probably saw Stephen Ferris picking up Orgenia and just thought, fancy a bit of that.
Exactly, it was like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Wait, no, hold my Genia.
Yeah, yeah. There's three other great moments in the first half. So one is, Aaron Cruden nails a drop goal.
Yes! Yeah, there's two drop goals in this game.
Yeah.
Both by unlikely sources.
Yeah. Like, Aaron Cruden's one's beautiful as well. Like,
yeah,
he strikes it really well. Like, it's almost as satisfying as the Mornay Stain one from the other week.
Mm.
But it sends the All Black 11-3 up. And again, it's one of those ruthless things. I hate how much we're repeating ourselves here. But it's really well built.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, famously, the All Blacks didn't know how to set a drop goal in 2007, right? When they were losing to France. And
they didn't have a draw for
you
it.
Can tell that those the ghosts of World Cup past were still haunting them a little bit, and there were demons surrounding, you know, drop goals in World Cup knockout matches, and that was so spot on. Everybody knew their role, and Aaron Cruden nailed the kick to back it up. There was also later on in the second half, Israel Dagg attempted to drop goal, and it goes about 20 meters to the right hand side of the posts.
He just scoops it in the air.
Yeah.
It's kind of hysterical.
Yeah,
it's a. But it's a because Israel Dagg was doing everything else so well, he went, well, I might as well be the guy in the pocket.
Sure,
I might as well.
It did slightly feel like he was taking the piss out of Aaron Cruden and just being like, oh yeah, I'm the drop kicker now.
Yeah, but he kind of just hits it. It's the kind of, we've all done it when we're trying a drop goal. If you scoop it too high, and it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah,
and it then ends up going wide as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The second cool thing from the second half, this feels like a nice little feature. The second cool thing from the first half is probably the most famous thing that happens in this game, which is Richard Kahui cutting Quade Cooper in half.
Yes.
That, I think it's Whippu, isn't it? Puts it a really good kick up right next to the touchline for that Quade Cooper catches. And basically, as soon as he catches it, the whole way, Richard Kahui's running after him and shouting at him to try and put him off.
Yeah.
And then eventually Cooper catches the ball and Kahui nails him into touch. Like, it is borderline murder what happens there.
Nick Mullins was directly just before that, because it was the whole narrative around this game, talking about how Quade Cooper was hated in New Zealand, probably going to be number one and so on. And then the moment Kahui nails him, his commentary, the line he says, is there were 3 million people in that tackle, which is a really ineffective use of bodies. It's a great line. But you feel like spread some out.
Yeah, it's true.
Use
actually.
A defensive line. You're overcommitting. Like, at least put a couple of them into breakdown after.
Yeah.
You could drop some into the backfield.
I was going to say, you could probably build up about a 300,000 person backfield there. So you've got a pretty heavy front line.
Absolutely no space whatsoever.
I think.
Just take them to Hurt Arena.
Yeah, exactly. Here's an idea. We should set up a game of rugby where the pitch is big enough to accommodate 3 million people to the same like proportions as 30 cover a 15. It's like, we can have a lot of referees as well, bear in mind. They can partake as well. I mean, obviously, the opposition applies any sort of line speed, we're fucked. But
that's the problem, isn't it? You just end up with everyone standing in each other's way, like Anthony Fiengo, bowling into them.
This is why we have small sliding games.
Right, is Lalo, not the Georgian word for try, and not
the Georgian word for rugby.
And not for the Georgian word for rugby, but the Georgian game that was played prior to rugby.
Prior to they
took on rugby. Yeah. Where the rules were basically, one, they would start with a ball in one village, you know, in like the middle of these two villages.
Yeah, I remember
and
this.
They then, all of the men in the village would, and they line it up as like one day, whenever, all the men in the village would then have to try and get that ball into the other, like the centre of the other village, into like a designated point. And like you could do absolutely anything to anyone. And like every year, at least one person died playing Lalo. What we should do is basically that, but on the pitch. So like say when Northampton play, I don't know, Leicester, like in a couple of weeks in the Premiership, right? We should have the entire pop, like every man, and then the Premier 15s, you know, can be the opposite, every woman, you know, every man in Leicester should play against every woman in Northampton. We should squeeze them all onto a rugby pitch, but get them to play by modern rules otherwise.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that we have the population of a few thousand. Sure. So I don't know, what's the population of Northampton? Northampton got a massive size disadvantage there, actually.
I reckon
their numbers
it's
down
at
already.
Least 23, because typically that's the amount they play on a weekend.
Okay, so Northampton has a population of 215,000, right?
Okay.
So they'll have about half of that.
Yeah.
So they'll have about 107,000, let's say.
Sure.
People, whereas Leicester has a population of about 357,000.
Okay.
So they have about twice the number to begin with.
Yeah.
But thankfully, it's Leicester, and they have a history of ill discipline, so hopefully there'll be a few men down, and probably...
I mean, Thomas Lavallini's going to be there, so they'll be down to, 299,999 in a minute.
No, knowing the way Leicester Tigers' discipline's been in the last 5 years, they're going to be down to 13 by the end of the
game. I think, that's it confirmed. So, Pod Social, we're going to play a game of Lalo together. Everyone's invited. I don't know where it is. TBA.
Northampton. Just middle of Northampton. Sure. It's Franklin's Gardens. Yeah. Pile them all in.
The other cool thing from this half, before the Craig Cooper drop goal, is that Richie McCaw gets the flying turnover where...
Yes!
So Australia... I think the All Blacks knock the ball on, don't they? And Australia have the ball. And they're sort of milling around, you know, on the 10-metre line. And then at one point, somebody turns away with the ball... And Richie McCaw literally jumps on their back and somehow manages to rip the ball away from them. And I physically can't figure out how that's possible.
It's one of the famous Richie McCaw moments.
Yeah.
You know, there's that, there's a try scoring against South Africa. There's a handful of them that really stand out as like, that is the
that's
moment that sums Richie McCaw up.
Yeah. And McCaw got a few like properly insane turnovers in this game.
Especially the second half. Again,
second
a bit
half,
like last week, he built into it.
Yeah.
Second half, he's on.
I think he was even better than he was last week in this game.
I think that might
this
be.
Is...
I don't know. I think it's very close. I think the previous game is amongst the best Richie McCaw played.
Yeah.
And it's kind of forgotten about because it was the quarterfinal in the lead-up. But the rest of the team was shit in the bed in the previous week, and Richie McCaw went, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bear in mind as well, want to mention it again, right? He is doing this all with a broken foot.
Oh, of course, yeah, I forgot about that.
He's doing all of this with a broken foot.
Christ.
He broke his foot in the previous game, and he came off, he found out the following day, and they kept it quiet.
Yeah.
The other story actually worth mentioning, I don't know if you heard this, about Piriwipu.
No.
So Piriwipu came off the pitch against Argentina, he was given an official man of the match, did his man of the match interview, came into the shed, as they call them in New Zealand, and was told that his grandfather had died that morning.
No.
So his grandfather died about an hour before the game.
Oh, my God. That must be so hard to, like, pick yourself up and try and just focus on winning the World Cup at that point.
So he then said afterwards, he dedicated that game to his granddad and he went out to play this game against Australia for him.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I mean, fair play to him, pulling it out of the bag.
He was released from a day's training to go to the funeral in the week.
Okay, yeah. Christ, that's difficult, isn't it? It's a good thing he was in New Zealand. Because if he was away from home and couldn't see his family, that would have been very difficult for him. I mean, I imagine it was anyway. But yeah, yes. That's awful.
Yeah. But no, so, yeah, it, you know, it kind of puts the fact that obviously he misses a few shots of goal, but he plays very, very well.
Yeah, he does. Game, yeah, he manages the game well.
I think it's the best game of the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And I think it kind of puts that in perspective a bit.
Yeah.
Of how well he played.
No, for sure, for sure. As I say, like, he has a couple of wobbly moments, but he does manage the game very well. And like, he is generally speaking on the same page as the likes of Nonu and Smith. And sort of the big game managers in the backs.
Yeah.
So, no, yeah, he does play a big part in the All Blacks winning this match.
Yeah,
Quade Cooper scores a drop goal.
Yes.
It's, to be honest, like, they spend a lot of time in the 22 thinking about it, but they don't actually set it up very well.
Quade Cooper's in the pocket for about a solid minute and a half before they kick the drop goal.
Yeah, okay. So when they actually send it back to him, he's got there's no blockers. So the All Blacks get a really good opportunity to charge. Well, there were blockers, but Wilgenia then passes to them and they take it in. And then he really quickly recycles it to Quade Cooper. And see, I suppose the speed on the pass is probably why Quade Cooper still gets it over.
That's what I thought when... Because I thought he was going to go a phase earlier than he did.
Yeah.
He then instead plays an incredibly quick phase so that the people who are going to charge it down aren't in the phase and aren't able to run up because he just made the tackle.
Yeah.
And then plays...
It's still an unusual thing, though, instead of actually using blockers.
Yeah, it works. But, you know, and it gives him Cooper nailed enough it, strike and so. Enough time. Yeah. Because anyone trying to make the tackle is coming from further out.
Yeah.
I think it was a perfectly fine setup, and I think Cooper takes it well.
Yeah.
And it's a weird moment of composure from an Australia team who don't really have any chances to be that.
Sure.
Either side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he then spent a lot of the second half, the first sort of 15 minutes of the second half, they have a lot of possession.
Yeah.
And they don't do anything with it. And you wonder if they just want to set up and take another drop goal.
Yeah.
Because even though at that point they're 17-6 down, you take another drop goal, you know, you're then starting to say, it's almost that statement of, we believe in ourselves to score these points.
Yeah.
You know, like, we will find a way.
Sure.
Rather than, we're going to find tries and hope we can break through you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that kind of, that Rob Baxter thing of, you know, like, we are looking to accumulate points and it is an entirely different thing to what the opposition are trying to do. You know, of like, we just want to accumulate enough points. We don't care how many opposition have scored or when they've scored them.
Sure, yeah. You're just saying about them being 17-6 down and just doing whatever they possibly can to get a half break or whatever. There's one really funny point. I mean, because there's a couple of points. So there's one passage of play where Genia and Cooper each make a couple of like half breaks and then the momentum is just ruined by Marnonu. But then there's a point when Pat McCabe thinks he sees a bit of a mismatch. He sees Owen Franks in front of him in midfield and thinks, right, I know what to do here. Like, if there's a front row in front of you and you're a centre/winger, you think, I'm going to run, right? But he doesn't quite get the grasp of the concept. And he doesn't run for the gap. He instead just runs headfirst into this tight head prop stood in midfield who just boulders into him and just puts him on his arse.
It's an approach, isn't it?
Yeah, and he then gets penalised and Weeper kicks the goal.
It really helps complement the Ant Finger midfield, doesn't it?
That
antics.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another solid Australian attack then. There's a great bit where they're starting to lose momentum and then suddenly Will Genia does... Like, this happened against Italy in the Australian first game in the pool stage. When they start to lose momentum, it would then be on Genia to snipe and find some gaps around the fringes to get them going forwards again. And typically you think that would be the job of your number eight or something at this stage in 2011. But Will Genia did that exceptionally well. And it was often a thing that, obviously, when the All Blacks lost momentum, they would slide it into the Australian 22 and they'd just go, right, here we go. When Australia lost momentum, they just kind of said, Will Genia, have you got any ideas?
There's a lot of that going on, isn't there? He's the only... So Luke Burgess on the bench is the only unused substitution.
Yeah. I feel sorry for Luke Burgess, man. He was such a good player.
He was a really good player, but he was not getting any... Like, he will have far fewer caps than Nick Phibbs.
I was going to say, just the fact Nick Phibbs got more caps than him is criminal.
But very good player, but Will Genia was on such form at this point.
Yeah.
And as I said, he was... alongside Ioane, Australia's best player.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't worth bringing him off.
Yeah.
And at one point, they cut to him warming up on the bench, and I thought it would be a mad thing to bring him off. And Genia is still making some very sharp, very inspired, and often quite weird but useful decisions in that last couple of minutes when Australia had the ball. And, you know, he makes a little snipe there. And he continues to play very well throughout the entire rugby match.
So we approach sort of the last 20 minutes here. And there's another point where the All Blacks have a kick at goal and Whippy takes it from about 40 metres out and he misses. Mm. But the All Blacks just could not look less arsed about it. Like, they just think... Like, they're playing like it's the last 5 minutes. For that whole last 20, and very comfortably, like, oh yeah, we can run the clock down because we're going to win this test match. And there is that confidence to it. And knowing that Weepu's shaved another minute off the clock with the Australians in their 22, normally you feel like, that's fine, there's another 19 of these minutes, you know, we'll be okay, we'll get another opportunity. But the All Blacks were just that comfortable in defence, and that was just before Dagg took the drop goal as well, so that, you know, the Wallabies were permanently playing outside their half.
He put the ag into DG.
Nice.
Because it's like he screamed in the middle of the drop goal. Like DG for drop goal.
That's a good one, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
I like that.
It's an original.
And ag is the noise he made when he did that pass into touch as well, which was really bad.
Yes.
But it was about time Israel Dagg did something really bad in this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, he's been like annoyingly good, hasn't he? Throughout this entire game in particular.
I mean, I guess that makes up for that pass that he just automatically, that offload that he automatically just got bang on, despite being like,
to Nonny.
Yeah, figuratively impossible. Yeah, and then basically Amp Finger goes off, and I thought that was a notable moment. Rob Horn comes on this place.
I mean, it's a big moment for Australia. You know, you really feel like they should up some momentum here.
Yeah. They only concede 3 points while he's off. I mean,
which is really quite impressive.
Yeah. But they scored none, so clearly they're missing him quite a lot. They lost the period he was off.
They scored the same number of tries.
Yeah, that's true.
Which he would have got Dick a day for anyway if he had scored some. So.
So the All Blacks are then, again, they look very comfortable going to the last 10 minutes. And they keep kicking to Quay Cooper as well because they know he's going to try something audacious. And they can trust that that rolling of the dice isn't going to cost them anything.
Quaid still has... He makes a lot of mistakes. He has a lot of passes that don't go to hand. He has a lot of things he tries that don't work. Yeah. He puts like free kicks out in the full, maybe.
Yeah.
But he still has, I think, three involuntary noise moments.
Yeah, yeah. He has a couple of great runs.
There's an offload he throws that's incredible. Yes. That somehow like slingshots around his own head.
Yeah.
There's a few moments of just sheer Quaid.
Yeah.
But
he has a couple of moments of absolute brilliance. There's a long pass that he does inside zone 22, which bounces really, really nicely. Yeah, but then the Wallabies get battered at the breakdown.
But that's the thing that keeps happening, of like, whenever Quaid does something that comes off, it then backfires on them moments later.
Because of McCall.
You know, like, nothing ever comes of it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty much for Tim McCall. I'd put some credit to Mononu and Jerome Kano as well. But sure, McCall. Yeah. So it kind of all builds into those last few minutes where finally the Wallabies have something on the line.
Yeah.
And you have a moment of suddenly thinking, like, oh, if they score here, this is interesting. You know, they're suddenly within a converted try of the All Blacks. And they kind of look like they're running out of ideas a bit once they get onto the try line.
Yeah. Well, there's that moment where Quaid Cooper has a run where he sidesteps. You know that thing Quaid Cooper does where he sidesteps the same guy like 6 times by running this really weird jagged line? He kind of does that and then gets slightly scragged and then gets absolutely bodied by his best friend, Sonny Bill Williams. And there is no hesitation from Craig Joubert to send him to the bin.
So it is, when you see the replay, very reminiscent of the tackle he would later be sent off for on Anthony Watson in the Lions series 6 years later.
Yeah.
At this point, of course, only one All Black had ever been red carded. Mm. And we'd had a red card the previous day. And I think all referees were very eager to avoid doing that.
Yeah.
And it, you know, at the time, it was a yellow
card. It was really, really funny, to be fair, that tackle, because it just felt like Sonny Bill hadn't... you shouldn't necessarily consider intent when it goes into tackle, because if you tackle them poorly and you body them with your shoulder, then, you know, it's a red card, you know?
Yeah.
But I just love the complete lack of will to wrap his arms from Sonny Bill. Like, he very actively goes to take him out with his shoulder. And let's say, this is his best friend.
He tucks his arm in.
They both,
his arm
on Twitter, would regularly talk about the fact they're best friends at this point.
To be fair, that happens to me quite a lot.
What, having best friends?
I just, like, my best friend regularly, like, just shoulders me in the face.
Do you have friends?
I've got one.
Oh, who's
Sonny Bill Williams. It's Owen Farrell.
Okay. Yeah.
He just shoulders me in the face.
That's good banter, actually. I think that what you should do is you should create a rugby, like, a Facebook page about rugby that just always shares memes about how Owen Farrell doesn't use his arms.
Owen Farrell doesn't use his arms.
Yeah.
How about, I've got another one, right? Another joke. Richie McCaw.
Yeah.
He's offside.
Oh, that's a good one. He's a cheat, and he gives away penalties. Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. Oh, I wanna think of one more. Andy Goode. He's the best fly off.
Legend. Yeah. Australians can't scrummage.
No. They're also all criminals.
You know Wales?
Yeah.
Didn't deserve to win the Six Nations.
Yeah, and also all the players are English. That's a good one.
All the players are English and they didn't deserve to win the Six Nations, unless they're playing for England, in which case they did.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they were very good, and they cheated in every single game.
Yeah.
And I hate them.
Yeah. Are we more or less finished with the game?
I think so. Yeah, let's move on to Dick of the Day.
Sure.
Right? Because
the All Blacks won 20
lead-in.
Points to 6.
Yes.
We'll just wrap that up.
There's a very natural lead-in from what we were just talking about, because one of the Dick of the Day contenders has to be Craig Joubert, the referee.
Right, yes. I was going to bring this up. Go on.
No, you do it.
So it's very clearly a yellow card for Sonny Bill Williams for charging into Quade Cooper with his shoulder. You know, that's fair enough. It's very clearly a yellow card. Or is it? Because there's nothing in Craig Joubert's hand, because he pulls the yellow card out of his pocket and he drops it.
Yeah. He drops it as he's trying to raise the yellow card.
And, like, he tries to style it out by then, like, turning the arm he has in the air to, like, point him to go off the pitch. And then he kind of realises he can't do this. So he's just like, right, okay, everyone's spotted. The cameras are on me. I've dropped a yellow card. And he bends down to pick it up and he can't. Like, it's that slippery that he keeps, like, dropping it on the floor, and he has, like, two or three attempts before he actually successfully regathers it.
So when he styled it out, I had a moment of thinking, is he now man of the match? Because he managed to make that look quite good. Like, he managed to make it look like that
natural.
Was what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And then he fumbles the card on the floor and you think, no, definitely Dick of the Day material instead. Yeah. He knocks it on the floor.
Yeah. Is that who you're going for? Or
No, that is a contender. That's a strong contender. Another contender. I don't know if you noticed Steve Hansen in this coaching box.
Once or twice.
They cut up a couple of times, and I noticed this twice during the game. And I'd never noticed this before, but Steve Hansen is really shit at clapping. And so there's a few times where, you know, like, it'll cut to him after the kick conversion or something good's happened.
Sure.
And he sort of, like, I'm going to have to do it on the camera, but I'll try and describe it. So he has one hand as you normally would to clap, right? Like, open palm, facing it. And the other one is turned the other way around.
Yeah.
Right? So he's kind of talking, like, one hand is palm first, the other is knuckles first.
Okay.
And he kind of bats them together like that.
Okay.
And he does it only, you know, like, in a more natural kind of way. So
yeah,
it's like
okay.
But, like, there's nothing stopping him just putting his hands together and clapping.
Yeah.
He does it like that instead, and he did it twice. So it's clearly just how Steve Hansen claps.
Evidently. That's a bizarre thing. Are there any other nominations you've got?
Well, I mean, Quade Cooper has a complete breakdown, so he's got to be in contention.
Yeah.
But I can't see someone miss three tackles and knock the ball on in the space of a minute. And also, there's a point where Anthony Wenger comes in at scrum half, right, and he can't pass. And he has to turn his entire body to try and spin it the other way.
Yeah. Wow.
So, for that, as per tradition, my dick of the day is the one and only Anthony Wenger.
Well done, Ampfinger. So, your Dick of the Day nominations are pretty much identical to mine. So, I had Craig Joubert written down. You just can't forgive Quade Cooper for kicking the ball out on the fall on the first kick of the game, can you?
But when the entire build-up's been about you.
Yeah, playing against New Zealand, where he's hated and where he was born. And, everything stacked against him, and then he does that. Like, he's kind of unforgivable. But I think you've actually persuaded me on Ampfinger. I think my Dick of the Day is Anthony Fienga. I just think it's a standing item at this point. And I don't know what the standings are between him and Martin Rodriguez, and I don't want you to tell me yet, because we will, after we've done an episode on the final, we're going to do an episode where we're going to go over all of these things and look at the stats and so on. So I'd like to wait for that. But I don't know if Ampfinger's going to take the lead from Rodriguez. That's quite an exciting thought.
I will say to you, those are number one and two.
I figured. Like, Contepomi's been a bit of a dick, but not that bad.
There are some... Third place is tied again between, I think, three or four players.
Okay.
And I have also put together a Dick of the Day Man of the Match team from the most nominations so far.
Okay,
that can still change. We've got a couple of games to go.
Yeah.
And a few nominations henceforth to come in.
Okay.
So that's all to come. But we're both going for Ampfinger here.
Yes, you've persuaded me on Ampfinger. Okay. Man of the match time.
So, I mean, Marnonu is once again incredible.
He's good, isn't he?
Incredibly, incredibly good. Israel Dagg is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think Israel Dagg has good as his best game in the tournament.
Yeah, he's very good.
But weirdly, like, the drop goal and the pass into touch kind of become blots on the copybook.
Yeah, I get that.
And
margins
so
are tight,
like,
in a semi-final.
Yeah, exactly. It was so tight that it was kind of him, Nonu, Kaino, who I thought was brilliant again.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time, I remember watching this game at the time when I was in, when I was watching it in 2011, and thinking Kaino was man of the match and thinking Kaino was the best player here. But I am once again going to go for Richie McCaw, man of the match.
Yeah.
Who I just thought was just that the, every time they need him, and even when they don't, he's there, you know? Like every impact he made was so, so decisive.
Yeah.
The game good as swings on him just doing things.
Sure. Yeah.
Again, like the, summed up by that tackle on Genia and the turnover on Adamashi Cooper and with 2 minutes to go. Yeah, like I just thought he was absolutely unreal, brilliant.
Yeah.
I think he made like 18 tackles or something. Hold on. I did have it in front of me. I now have it in front of me once again. Yeah, he made 17 tackles.
Right.
Wow. The most by any player. You know, the next best was Pocock on 12.
Wow.
You know, just that's good as you can get. Once again, Richard McCaw. I don't know if you've heard of him, really.
I'm aware of his
work. You know, when I'm starting my Facebook page, you know, I'm a proper rugby, you know, like a real rugby
fan. Yeah, you know, like you acknowledge like, that forwards like do the hard
work. A lot of people think someone like Quade Cooper is a good rugby player, but I think that Richard McCaw actually is the best rugby player.
Yeah, man. Like, so, I think the best player is like Neil Back, you know, because he always did the unseen work. Like, he'd get the ball rather than not scoring tries or whatever, you know. I'm a fan of Richard Hill, you know.
Do you know who's really bad?
Who?
George Ford.
Oh, yeah, he's rubbish, mate. He's rubbish.
He does no unseen work.
Yeah. And he's unsubscribed from your Patreon as well, so, like, we can now chat shit about him and be honest and, like, explain the truth that he's actually not very good.
It wasn't a Patreon. It was direct payments into a bank account.
Oh, okay.
He didn't want to give the Patreon.
Everyone listening to this should, on the Patreon, though, you know, get on that.
Should also know that I'm definitely not receiving $8,000 a month from George Ford to say it's good.
Anymore, yeah. Anyway.
Losing that final really cost him in bonuses.
Yeah. Oh, he's so bad on the back foot. Oh, shut up.
I'm not getting the lines.
The good thing is he takes the ball to the line.
That's the thing. I'm so... Oh, no. I know you didn't watch the BT coverage of the final of the weekend, but I'm just going to say this on air right now, right? There's a moment, obviously, La Rochelle being a man down, right, where Austin Healey did the most 1994 ass analysis I've ever seen, where he stopped, there was like a scrum in Toulouse's own half, right, and he just does these lines of like, well, if Untermac runs straight at the number 10, then he's running the inside shoulder, then he gives it to 12, and they run at the inside shoulder, then they get it out the wing, and the wing will score.
Have you heard of defenders moving, lads?
But that's the thing, like, you can see by the freeze frame he got to, the 9 had already moved, and the 9 and the 7 had both moved into the 10's channel, and the 10 began to drift on the screenshot he'd frozen it on, so we could see his point wasn't
It's good. Not a board game,
it's
mate.
So, like, it annoyed me so much that he couldn't see what was in front of him, never mind have seen any rugby from the last 10 years. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. It was just
should do my man of the match
analysis. Yeah, please go.
So, I mean, I was going to say Corey Jane was brilliant. Like,
Corey Jane was very
every good. Single touch of the ball, he did something positive. And, like, there was a couple of really penetrating kicks, and I think he really, in that period of pressure where the All Blacks were just not giving the Wallabies a sniff, I feel like he was the player who was most emblematic of it all and was constantly just piling on, and everything sort of was coming through him, which is an unusual thing to say about a winger, but he was so good. But I'm gonna agree with you. I think Richie McCaw is like, this is right up there with like the best game I've ever seen play for the All Blacks. You know, this is right up there. It's definitely one of them. There's so many turnovers that are just feel freakish, and that is the small margin that it takes to get into a World Cup final and I guess win the thing eventually. So much rested upon the shoulders of Richie McCaw, and everything the All Blacks needed came through him.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very hard to disagree.
So the All Blacks go through into the final to where they will face France.
Yes, but first we now know the lineup of the big one.
Yes.
Which is the third place playoff, which will be between now we know Wales and Australia.
That is such a big game. Like, I can't wait for Craig Mitchell to play in it.
So that is going to be the next fixture. That is going to be the next game we are coming to on this podcast. The penultimate game of the Rugby World Cup 2011.
And we have the final up soon. Like,
we have the final up soon.
Like, we know the lineup for the final now. We've not known it in the last 10 years. Like, we had it wiped until we watched it all back again.
Yeah.
From our memories.
We've just been stuck watching the Croods over and over again.
Yeah, man.
Just in the hope that eventually
a new age has begun, thankfully.
And soon a new age will be over as we finish this podcast.
So, next up we'll be watching the Wales-Australia game in a way of sort of dampening the fact that there's a final coming up. And we have a guest do we not?
Yes. So the plan, all being well, I know because he's mentioned this on Blood and Mud, is Josh Gardner of the Blood and Mud podcast, who at the time was so depressed by the semi-final he didn't watch the third place.
He just went to the pub instead, right?
Something like that, yeah. He just decided deliberately not to watch
it. We'll find out what the real story is about that next week. So we're getting him to watch that game for the first time ever next week.
So I asked Josh early on as doing this podcast, do you fancy doing the third place playoff? And he has since regretted that decision. But we'll find out how much next week.
But yes, we'll see you all and Josh next week. Goodbye.
See ya. Bye. Cyril, bye. That's what I say. Cyril, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.